maybe that you could have gotten away with that 10 years ago. But today, if your position as a company or as a team or as a person is that, well, I'm not going to change, that's not going to work. I mean, we don't have to discuss whether it's good or bad or whether we like it or not. It's de facto the case that everything is changing at a pace that is completely unprecedented.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Hi, I'm Brad Garner, and I'd like to welcome you to Digital to Learn. I'm here with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder.
Hi, everyone.
Our guest today is author, entrepreneur, and acclaimed international speaker, Frans Johansson. He is the founder and CEO of the Medici Group, an enterprise solutions firm that empowers organizations to leverage diversity and inclusion to build and sustain high-performing teams. He is the author of The Medici Effect, a book that became the origin for the term Medici Effect. This book has been translated into 21 different languages and has become the definitive book on how diversity and inclusion drive innovation. He is also the author of The Click Moment, a 2012 book that discusses the role of luck and serendipity in personal lives and in business. Frans was raised in Sweden by his African-American Cherokee mother and Swedish father. Johansson has lived all of his life at the intersection. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Environmental Science from Brown University and a Master in Business Administration from the Harvard Business School. Welcome in joining Frans Johansson to the Digital to Learn podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you with us. We're going to jump right into our questions. You have such a fascinating way of looking at the world and how it operates. And that we'll talk about your books and how they reflect that in a minute. But what was a young Frans Johansson like growing up?
What was a young Frans Johansson like? I think I was a very curious person that grew up in a circumstance where I was quite different. My mother is Black and Cherokee. My dad is Swedish. And I grew up in Sweden. I like to make a joke of the fact that pretty much everybody around me was blonde, blue, and quite reserved. And it's not that much of a joke. I mean, that's pretty much, pretty much how that played out. But it gave me, so there were challenges growing up that way, of course, in a number of different ways. But it also gave me some terrific insights. I saw how my parents were able to mix and match and build on this, their cultures, their backgrounds, their norms. It really fed into who they raised me, how they raised me and my sister. And I think it just made me very open to difference. It made me open to differences. In between all of those thoughts, I would be going fishing, playing Dungeons & Dragons. I admit to that freely now that it's cool. again. And write. I wrote a book in high school that I actually managed to sell, and that was a big step for me as it made me realize what a future could be like.
Wow.
Growing up in that culture and being different as you described it, did that give you some space to try things out and be more creative in that way?
Well, I think yes, because every time I came home, that space was different from the space that I was outside of my home. And so like almost like this happened daily. And I think that's, you know, this is far more common today, of course, whether that has to do with people growing up in between cultures or in between race or in between countries. But at that time, it was fairly unusual, definitely in Sweden. And it became a way for me to explore lots of different ideas. I think it's also important though that irrespective of that, you have to have an environment that welcomes or at least encourages or supports your exploration of different ideas. And my parents, they really did that. They had a philosophy of that the best way to spend your time is doing something that you you're really passionate about, that you really think about a lot, that you dream of doing. And I think that seeped through, and they encouraged that.
That's wonderful.
That's excellent. How did the subject or the style of your writing evolve from that book you wrote in high school to books you've written more recently?
When I was writing in high school, this was Dungeon Dragons style books. Dragons, princesses, and so on. I think that what it did do was it taught me one extremely important thing. It helped me understand the secret of writing, which I hadn't understood up to that point. And that was that the secret of writing is to write. The way I wrote that book was 3 or 4 times a week after school, I would go into my dad's office. He had a computer that nobody was using. And I would work on that for 1 to 2 hours.
Wow.
A clip. And if you do that enough, if you write 2 or 3 pages after 18 months, you will have a book. Like it's this thing that you just got to keep this. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen over a weekend. You just keep on doing that. And that never left me. That notion made it possible for me. Actually made me realize that it was possible to eventually write a book because I'd already done it. Even though I still, even today, love the notion of writing fiction books. But this really took hold was when I thought of the idea of writing The Medici Effect. That was, and at that point, I knew that I could do it. So how has my writing style changed? It's completely different from fiction to me. and, you know, it's a lot less juvenile.
You've reminded me of one of my pet peeves, and that is having a conversation with someone where they just kind of casually say, I think I'm going to write a book about that. Having no idea about the level of effort that takes.
It's hard. I mean, it's easier for some than others. But I mean, for me, it's just brutal. Like, and it's
it is.
You're just hacking away at this thing. And you just got to keep on going. I mean, there is no shortcut in that way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, we'd love to hear a little bit more about your book, The Medici Effect. And there's been high praise for the breakthrough concepts described in this book. Could you give us a description of the principle and its origin?
Sure. At its simplest, The Medici Effect really says that diversity drives innovation. It says that if we step into an intersection of different disciplines or cultures or fields or industries, we have a better shot at breaking new ground. And I call it the Medici Effect because basically that's what the Medici family encouraged by sponsoring highly creative people from lots of different disciplines, architects, sculptors, philosophers, painters, Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, from all over Europe, even as far away as from China. And they sort of attracted them to the city of Florence in Italy about 500 years ago, where these creators were able to break down the boundaries between the different sort of disciplines and cultures and ignite what became known as the Renaissance, one of the most creative eras in Europe's history, certainly at that time. And so that effect that they created became a way to describe this, that type of effect that we can create in our own lives, in our own teams, in our own organizations. And it's just fascinating because it is a cornerstone of understanding how creativity and innovation work. You know, how does the hospital improve the coordination and collaboration of the surgical unit? The normal way to solve that would be for the surgical unit to look at how other hospitals solved it. Well, what if you look at something else, like how a pit stop crew in a Formula One car racing team has solved their coordination and collaboration? And in fact, de facto hospital in Cambridge, United Kingdom did exactly that and was able to lower the deaths to follow from those error rates. And now this sort of pit stop model is one that has spread through hospitals around the world. This is a modern incarnation of that concept. Of course, Leonardo da Vinci has become the paragon, if you will, or the case that we look back to 500 years ago as to somebody who did this across multiple disciplines and fields. But this plays out today over and over and over again.
So when you look around you and see groups working or different kind of industries or whatever, are there moments where you say, that's a great example of the Medici effect? And at the same time, do you look around and see a problem that keeps brewing and growing where you think to yourself, I know how you could solve that?
Oh, well, I mean, so Well, yes, is the answer. Yes, again, I mean, you know, what I've been able to do over the years is, as I started speaking on this, I didn't realize at the time when I wrote the book, but I also had a gift for sharing these ideas on a stage, basically. Mm-hmm. So I traveled the world talking about this to mostly corporations and leaders, but could be anything, all kinds of organizations around the world. But then the question came, amazing, right? This is great. Diversity drives innovation. And how do we think about that in terms of industry and fields and disciplines and race and gender and and age and people with different backgrounds and so on? But how do we make it happen? So to answer that question, I created a company called the Medici Group, which is was a consulting firm. And we worked with, I mean, organizations all over the world. We've been at Disney World for 12 years. You can sort of see how this thinking is playing out in their products, movies, TV shows, everything else. And now recently, I've sort of innovated that again, created a AI-driven platform that enables teams all over the world to understand, how do we create aspects of this metadirect in our own teams? How can we be more open about diversity of perspectives or of team members? And how once we are doing that, can we be inclusive? How can we be inclusive in making sure that we are actually capturing these sentiments, these perspectives, in order to drive speed, agility, innovation? Yes, I see it everywhere. Every team would benefit from applying this type of lens, bringing in diverse perspectives and being inclusive of those perspectives.
So as you go out and talk about this, or as people read your book, and you're in an organization, let's say, are there people in those organizations who push back because it's a different way of operating? How does that materialize?
Of course. You know, a number of years ago, Facebook, and I'm not on Facebook anymore, so they've probably done this several times since then. But that time, Facebook changed the design of their newsfeed. I think this is probably back in 2010 this is this example I'm thinking of. And what happened? There was all these Facebook groups that popped up saying, you know, we want the old newsfeed style back. And so first I went in and I looked at, well, who are these people? And some of them had been on Facebook for like a month. So it's like, I've been on there for like 2-3 weeks and now please, I want it back. Like the notion of change, my point is that the notion of change can be difficult. And you may not even have been involved in what you're doing for very long. And it's still difficult because you have to drive change. And so that is the resistance point, right? But here's the thing. Maybe that you could have gotten away with that 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But today, if your position as a company or as a team or as a person is that, well, I'm not going to change, that's not going to work. I mean, we don't have to discuss whether it's good or bad or whether we like it or not. Mm-hmm. It's de facto the case that everything is changing at a pace that is completely unprecedented. So this issue that you talked about here, Brad, is slowly going away. Like, I'm seeing an enhanced desire to want to understand what it means to be innovative, to understand what it means to be faster, to understand what it means to be more inclusive, and to understand what it means to be more diverse. Like, these things are happening at a level that I would never have expected.
So let's go back to your example of Leonardo da Vinci. There are a group of people who've been identified by their biographers. He's one of them. And the claim is made, when he was alive, he knew everything there was to know. So I wonder what it would be like to bring him forward into 2020. What kind of team member do you think he might be?
Well, first of all, you know, I don't know if I agree. I've seen that notion. I don't know if I agree with the notion he did. No. It is certainly true that the volume of knowledge was less. But it's only in the eyes of today that we can actually even define what the body of knowledge was back then.
Right.
I mean, so let's just be clear about that. I think that people will say, we'll have a much better understanding of what knowledge is today, 50 years from now, than we do today.
True.
So that's one thing. Now, with that said, here's what we are seeing happening. We can sort of imagine talking about our augmented brain, because what Leonardo da Vinci was able to do was integrate a lot of different knowledge pieces. Mm-hmm. I think that's where this is getting at. And then sort of process it in his own mind. Now, how do we do that today? Well, the question really is, how effective are we at recombining concepts and ideas? Mm-hmm. This is really the key.
Yeah.
So what do you need? You need the ability to attract concepts and ideas, and you need some sort of platform in which you recombine it. Well, in the Da Vinci's case, a lot of it happened in his own brain.
Yeah.
Today, teams to do this effectively are finding ways to do that between people. That could be live, in person, less now with COVID, or digitally, or mm-hmm. asynchronously. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about the attraction of concepts and diverse concepts, and then the recombination of those concepts. And then the last piece, which is the exploration, the execution, the testing of those. Today, we can do all those things, but in order to do them effectively, the Leonardo da Vinci today is less of a person and more of a person as part of a team. And so the question is, what type of network have you built? Mm-hmm. And what type of network has a team built? The most effective teams we see are teams that not only have the ability to be inclusive within themselves, but they themselves are tapping into wildly diverse networks. You want to make something happen? Well, I got one way of doing that. If that doesn't work, well, some other team member has another way of doing it. And here you are, playing off of, building on each other. So that's the Leonardo da Vinci's of today and going forward.
Wow. Such a great privilege it's been to have Frans Johansson with us today. The good news is, we're going to be back again with part two of this conversation. So be sure to join us.
And for all of our listeners, please check out our website, digitaltolearn.com/numerical2, to access the resources associated with our guest today. Thanks everyone for joining us on Digital to Learn.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.